Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, as happy as can be to be back here with you on this day after Thanksgiving. That's it here in the United States. If you're outside the United States, we celebrated Thanksgiving yesterday, and today we are either, we're doing one of two things, relaxing or undergoing the excruciating pain of being at a mall or a superstore trying to get our Christmas shopping done before the prices go back to the normal prices. Those are the two things that we do on this day, but we also get to talk to Andrew Petiprin, who is our guest this hour. He's got a new book out called Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List, and we're going to talk with him about film. This hour, we're going to continue our conversation about film, but we're going to move into some Christmas films. Thus, my current outfit, where I put on my Santa hat for the first time this year, and it's depressing to put on a Santa hat. When you put the hat on and you actually look like Santa. I didn't think this all the way through. And now I'm looking at myself in the monitor thinking, that is an old, chubby, Santa-looking dude with a white beard. And it's exaggerated by the fact that I'm now wearing a Santa hat. So I'm going to be unhappy this entire hour, but I will try to fake being happy. I'm certainly not unhappy about our guest, Andrew Petiprin. Andrew, thanks for being back for another hour.
Glad to talk movies. This is great.
Yeah, where's your Santa hat, dude?
I know, I'm unprepared.
You would at least if you wore a Santa hat, you would just look like a person in a Santa hat. I look like actual Santa. Look at that, Andrew.
I don't know, Si. You need a lot more beard, I think.
That's the one thing. Okay, you're old enough, fat enough, but don't have enough beard. That's what you're saying, Andrew. That's what you just said to me. Why are we having this guy on?
Your beard isn't white enough. Maybe I should say that. So I'll save a little face.
All right, whatever. But you like my coat? It looks like Santa in a trucker coat, though. It's green, though, but it's... Yeah. No.
I like it. Yeah. No, I do. I think it suits you. Yeah.
Well, thank you for pretending like you like my coat. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to talk about Christmas movies. All right, I'm going to tell you something that a famous film reviewer who I'm not going to name said to me years ago. This person said, "There are no good films about the birth of Jesus."
Yeah.
Is that true? There are no good films about the birth of Jesus?
It's really funny, Si. As I was preparing to talk to you today, I was thinking I should have in my mind a very, you know, a very original Christmas story movie in my head, and I really couldn't think of one. I don't know if I think you're the person you were talking to there is right. I can't think of, I mean, you know, maybe in Jesus of Nazareth, Zeffirelli's a kind of epic movie about the life of Christ.
Yeah.
The scene where Jesus is born is pretty great, pretty powerful. But, you know, that's really more of a mini series, and the movie itself is not just really, it's not just about Christmas. So, I don't think there are very many. No.
That's so weird to think about that. But is it because it's not that cinematic? I mean, like, I don't know, like, it seems like you could make it cinematic. I mean, they did with like the Little Drummer Boy, and I'm not going to be an advocate for the Little Drummer Boy, but they made it cinematic by making it not about Jesus, basically.
Yeah.
So is what's the deal? Why don't we have a good nativity movie?
I don't know. I mean, maybe part of it is childbirth itself is not the most cinematic thing. You know, do you want to watch a movie where a woman is having a baby? I mean, my experience being in the room when my wife was having our babies was very powerful. I mean, very, very much so. But it's also, you know, kind of a, you know, not the kind of thing that we normally see on screen, I suppose. Whereas, for example, in painting, there are lots of paintings of the nativity of, you know, of baby Jesus with the Holy Family and you know, the shepherds or the wise men or whatever. But that's caught in a moment. That's not, you know, something that's sort of being depicted, you know, happening. So I don't know. It's a really good, that's a good point. I don't know.
I don't know either, but all you filmmakers out there, here's an opportunity. We need a movie about the actual birth of the Savior. That's a good movie. That's not to say there's not good Christmas movies. I'm not saying that. I'm mm-hmm. just saying that the actual first Christmas, we don't have a good one on that.
Yeah, maybe some of our listeners will correct us. I hope that they do. There are areas.
Well, I'm not giving out the email address. Do you want to give out yours? Because I don't want. No, you can send it to radio@catholic.com. Look, if you think of one, we got a lot of time between now and Christmas. So if you come up with like, you're like, this is a beautiful film about the birth of the Lord, send it. Well, I want to talk about it on the air. I'll invite you to come on the air and talk about it. If you send me a good one, send it to radio@catholic.com. Radio@catholic.com. Okay, so, but can I just ask you a perennial, what's an annual question now about film? Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? I mean, so many people, this has become a big thing to be, my favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard. It's not a Christmas movie. It is a Christmas movie. What is your take, Andrew Petiprin, film expert, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Die Hard absolutely is a Christmas movie, oh. No doubt about it, for a number of reasons. One, I mean, it is obviously it's set at Christmas time, and most of the movies that we consider Christmas movies, that's basically the main criterion that we're considering. You know, it takes place at Christmas time, and there are issues related to the celebration of this great holiday that play into the plot, right? That's very much the case in Die Hard. Detective John McClane is trying to fly from New York to Los Angeles to visit his estranged wife and his children for Christmas, to see them and celebrate Christmas. So there's this tension from the beginning. He and his wife are estranged from each other. He's really hopeful that maybe he can win her back by the right celebration of Christmas. But he arrives, and what does he find? His wife is held hostage along with a lot of other people in this big office building by some terrorists at Christmas time. Now, there are interpretations of Die Hard that I think overplay a little bit John McClane's kind of Christ-like status in the movie. But it's worth mentioning, isn't it? This guy whose name is J. McSee, not J.C., but J. McSee, descends from the sky to save everybody, to save a bunch of people, right?
What?
So that's kind of like the big trope that we can lay on top of how we think about Die Hard. Now, once he gets there, he's shooting Uzis and he's walking on broken glass and he's smashing through windows and, you know, he's using profane language and all that kind of thing. But it's a movie about a guy who saves people, and that's kind of the message of Christmas to some degree.
All right, I'm processing this. The Christ imagery of John McClane. I had not considered that before. Processing. All right, I'll buy it. Okay, so you say Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Is it a good movie or is it a bad movie? Or
I think it's a great movie. I love Die Hard. I think it's one of the all-time great action movies. Bruce Willis has a ton of heart in that character when he plays John McClane. The way that he kind of mentors the other cop, played by Reginald Vell Johnson from the TV show Family Matters, is really beautiful. There's just a lot of really funny lines that he utters, and ultimately it's a funny, not funny. I mean, it's a funny movie to some degree, but it's also kind of a poignant movie because although ostensibly it's about these terrorists who take over this building, you find out played by Alan Rickman, by the way, better known to some people as Professor Snape from the Harry Potter movies. But you find out that he doesn't have any political ideology. He's just a thief. He just wants to steal money at Christmas time. And that's very much a theme that runs through a lot of Christmas movies. The Grinch, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Alan Rickman is basically just the Grinch. He wants to steal Christmas. And John McClane, the do-gooder, has come along to save everybody and stop that from happening.
All right. Well, we settled one now. We'll get into more Christmas movies as we go. We got to take our first break. Our guest is Andrew Petiprin. Check out his new book, Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. Right back with more discussion of Christmas movies on this day after Thanksgiving in the United States on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilina with a few words about St. John Chrysostom. St. John Chrysostom is probably the most famous Christian preacher in all of history. His name, which is really a nickname, Chrysostom, means golden mouth. It was given to him because of his preaching. People went to Mass just to hear him preach. St. John Chrysostom was a hero, and he taught us how to speak the truth, but also how to live by that truth, even if we're called to live it heroically.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Happy day after Thanksgiving to you. Thanks very much for being here with us. If it's your day off or you're traveling and you discovered us for the first time, I would like to invite you to check us out at Catholic.com. Catholic Answers is an apostolate of the Catholic, of lay people in the Catholic Church, devoted to explaining and defending the Catholic faith. This is not typical of what we do on this program. We usually take calls and questions about the Catholic faith, but every now and then we get the opportunity to do something a little different. And this is a great opportunity, the day after Thanksgiving, to just talk about film with somebody who we really like. We really enjoy when Andrew Petiprin is here with us, and to talk about the things we like, which is films and faith and. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're having a good time enjoying the conversation because it is a little off the beaten track for us. I won't give out the phone number because we're not going to do calls today. We're just going to enjoy our conversation. We're talking about Christmas movies right now. In the first hour, which you can find on our podcast or, you know, just go back and listen to it wherever on the EWTN app or wherever you listen to the show, you can go back and listen to it. We talked about some Thanksgiving movies. We talked about some big movies of the year 2023. And now we're talking about Christmas movies with Andrew Petiprin. He has, in the first segment of this hour, committed to the fact that he is in the camp that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and he says it's not just a Christmas movie, but a darn good one. He didn't use such foul language, but that's what I heard. That was the spirit of the thing. It's a darn good Christmas movie. You want to give us any other Christmas movies, Andrew?
Well, the one that I enjoy watching most nowadays is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. There are one or two objectionable things in that, but I think it is just absolutely hilarious. And I don't know about you, Cy, but as a husband and father, I feel actually a kind of anxiety every year with regard to Christmas because you're trying to give your kids, your family, a meaningful experience.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't want to over commercialize it, but you know that getting the right gifts for your wife, for example, that's important. You know that, like, you know, being able to kind of be present and to make a memory is something that it's really valuable. You know, maybe you, like me, have certain kind of images in your head for what Christmas was like growing up. Well, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is like, it's hilarious because it taps into all of those anxieties that a lot of us feel in the world mm-hmm. today. And it stars Chevy Chase, one of the great comedic actors of a previous era. He's still around, I think, maybe not quite as funny as he once was, but he plays the kind of quintessential suburban dad. He works hard. He wants to give to his family, but he finds everything he tries to do goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trying to engineer the perfect experiences and everything just ends up going totally haywire to the point that he really just about loses his mind. So I find Christmas Vacation to be once we're ready to watch that one, and we usually, by the way, Cy, watch it today, the day after Christmas. The day after Thanksgiving. So I expect I'm going to be tuning into that one with my wife and kids tonight. But it's a wild ride. I love it.
You know, if we talked, when we talked about Oppenheimer, I got the sense that in the way that you described the film, and again, I have to admit that I have not yet seen Oppenheimer, that there's something about Oppenheimer's undertaking to build the bomb being maybe a kind of, not metaphor, but an image of the modern possibility of wasting your life in work that is... that's not good for people or not good for you, or in other ways maybe involves great achievement, but the achievement itself is almost an achievement not worth having. When you talk about this movie as him trying to engineer the perfect experience, that is the modern dilemma. People trying to live their best life are ruining their lives.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think that Clark Griswold, who that's the name of the character, I think that his heart is definitely in the right place, unlike Robert Oppenheimer, for example. I mean, he loves his wife, he loves his children, and he's proud of his work, but he also clearly lives a life in which his work serves the end of providing for his family and, you know, giving him the means to support the people that God has put into his life. Now, I mentioned God, but God, you know, it's not a movie about a church-going family by any means. Mm-hmm. And yet, Clark, you know, the opening scene of the film is the family's driving out to the country to find a Christmas tree and cut it down. And Clark is singing Joy to the World. He's singing traditional Christmas hymns. And, you know, you could just chalk that up to, well, he just feels sort of nostalgic, like those are the kinds of songs that you sing for Christmas. But I do think that there's an undercurrent in that film of a man who, he's not a churchgoer, and yet he does somehow kind of unconsciously believe that he's living his life for a greater purpose, namely a purpose given to him by God.
Right, right.
Now, he screws it all up in a sense because it's almost like he's not depending enough on the grace of God. It's like he knows there's God stuff wrapped up in Christmas, but he's the one who feels like he has to do all the work rather than receiving the gifts that come from him, from God. In a sense, like the movie is about a man who needs to learn how to receive rather than give, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. But because what the modern person has to learn to do is to receive as well. Like I think that we're so mistaken about this, that we think we have to achieve happiness. We have to achieve our humanity. But really, the Christian message is, no, you have to receive it as a gift. And if you can either be disposed to receive the gift or indisposed to receive the gift, but you cannot achieve happiness. You cannot achieve fullness. All of these things are gifts, and take them, and trying to take them is kind of the Adam and Eve problem, rather than receive them.
Yeah, especially for the high achieving types in this world. I mean, there are people who, you know, maybe are a little prone to laziness, who don't have any problem, you know, sitting back and receiving whatever comes their way. But, you know, the types that really want to make a difference in this world, who are really the hardworking types, and that's admirable. We need people like that. But I sometimes say to people who, and I fall into this category too, and I need to remind myself of this, but you know how people sigh, they say things like, don't just stand there, do something. Well, I sometimes say to people, don't just do something, stand there.
Yeah.
You know, like slow down. You don't need to always be doing, because you might end up finding, as you said earlier, that you kind of achieve the opposite effect of what you intended. That's totally the message of Christmas Vacation. You know, Clark Griswold just builds this up so big that when it crashes down upon him, you know, he loses his mind just about. And it's funny. It's really funny, but it's also kind of dark. And it's kind of a reminder of some of the dilemmas that we live with in the world today.
But don't you think many Christmas, like the very special Christmas episode that you see on TV or a lot of Christmas media, actually gets and it sounds like you are saying this, gets the message of Christmas exactly backwards. They say the true meaning of Christmas is giving and not receiving, when that is exactly the opposite of what Christmas is about. Christmas is about receiving. It is not about giving. It's secondarily it might be, but its primary meaning is receiving the Lord who comes into this world.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's why I think Christmas comedies are particularly good, because I think that comedy inevitably kind of turns norms on their head. And, you know, alas, we don't have as much good comedy now as we had even 20 or 30 years ago. But, you know, a Christmas comedy like Christmas Vacation, I think really it turns that paradigm on its head and shows us what we ought to really be thinking about. You know, another one that's like that is maybe at this point, the most popular Christmas movie ever, which is Home Alone, believe it or not. Home Alone was made in 1990, and it is an extraordinarily popular movie. It's very hard to find anybody, not only in the United States, but abroad. A friend of mine who lives in Poland was telling me, he used to live in the Chicago area and moved to Poland. And he told me that when he got to Poland, everyone there was intrigued by the fact that he was from Chicago because of Home Alone, because Home Alone is set in Chicago. And they wanted to visit Chicago so that they could see the Home Alone house. So, you know, it just goes to show you how America's cultural artifacts get exported. But I think Home Alone is a great movie to watch. I think that it really, it really brings up a lot of these important themes about the important message of Christmas. Now, again, we get the, they're called the McAllister family. They are presumably Catholics. I you know, they're a large family, but we don't see the family, you know, thinking of Christmas in terms of going to Mass, of practicing their faith, the kinds of things that we think are important. Nonetheless, there are some really important themes that run through that movie that are very much rooted in our faith. One of the most important ones is the importance of home. You know, Kevin learns to defend what is his. He learns to love where he's from and to believe that it is something worth fighting for, which I think is a strong message to us today in the West, that we have a home that was built by people who knew better than we did and who are maybe in many ways more faithful than we are. And we have a duty. We have a duty to this inheritance. And little Kevin McAllister in the Chicago suburbs kind of lives that out in this hilarious way by hitting robbers with paint cans and stuff like that. But you might remember there's a time in the movie towards the end where he goes to church. He goes into a church. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's a beautiful building. But he seems to think that that's the kind of place you go to find the inspiration that you need to do the things you're supposed to do. So, you know, it's definitely not a hit you over the head with Christian messaging, but it is a movie that I think is not altogether unedifying for us Christians to watch.
So is it the case nowadays that if it is a hit you over the head with Christian messaging, in some ways it's going to be less successful in conveying the message because people are so well defended against religion?
I think that could be. And I think a lot of people, maybe even believers, might come away just thinking like, you know, that's a little too on the nose. Maybe that's just a little bit, it's too sappy or too, you know. I mean, there are definitely cultural Christian, you know, real Christian offerings that do a great job with this. You know, The Chosen is very good, you know, that kind of thing. But there are a lot of things that are marketed in this like specifically Christian category that a lot of people look at and they kind of go, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's fine. I like the message, but maybe something a little more complex would actually deliver the goods a little better. So, you know, I don't know. We live in this post-Christian age. It would be really nice if we had more overt Christian stuff just kind of baked into normal stuff that didn't have to be put over in another category called Christian. But hey, you know, we make do with what we've got, and we look for the truth where we can find it.
Yeah, but there was a time when you could have like a priest in a movie, Going My Way or Boys. Is that right? Going My Way? Is that the one with Ingrid Bergman?
I believe so.
And Bing Crosby. And the priest could just be a priest. It was an uncomplicated kind of, I think everything has to be so morally complicated now. I actually think that sometimes the people portraying like the flawed hero are actually more morally simplistic than some of these morally uncomplicated movies were. There's a kind of moral dumbness to them.
Yeah, I mean, if you see a priest in a movie or in a TV show nowadays, my wife and I joke about this. We watch a lot of British mysteries. If there's ever an Anglican vicar or a Catholic priest for that matter in a movie, he's either going to be a bumbling idiot or the murderer. He's going to be one of those two things. He's not going to be a well-rounded human being, probably. Yeah.
Or a series I saw, I think it was on Netflix, where he turned out to be a vampire.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, okay, I get it. Father seems like a nice guy, but he's like, that is the most morally simple message. I mean, talk about hitting you over the head with the idea that you can't trust people. Good people are the very people you can't trust.
Right. Yeah. You know, there are some older Christmas movies that I think do a good job with this. One of them is the original Bishop's Wife. I don't know if you've seen that.
That's a great movie. Yeah, with Cary Grant, right?
Cary Grant and David Niven.
David Niven,
David Niven plays an Anglican bishop. So a little different for us as Catholics to see a bishop with a wife. But it is, I think, a really beautiful movie that makes you feel real good to be a Christian at the end.
Yes, exactly. And the problem is the bishop is trying to do something that seems very Christian, but the motivation is entirely not Christian. He needs, I forgot about that movie, The Bishop's Wife. Yeah. Well, first of all, Cary Grant's just a killer in that movie. And he is in a lot of movies, but that the message that there is a way to, that you can have all the appearances of being Christian without a Christian heart and motivation. I love that movie.
I do too. Yeah, David Niven is trying to build a cathedral. He's trying to raise money to build a cathedral. And if you've ever tried to raise money in the Christian world, you know that it can become kind of an idol. Like you lose sight of you doing things for the glory of God, right? And that's what happens in that movie.
All right, more Christmas movies to come, both the good and the bad, with our guest, Andrew Petiprin, author of Popcorn with the Pope, a guide to the Vatican film list, available now on Amazon and on the Word on Fire website. Right back after this.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carlo Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carlo's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Having a little bit of fun on this. It's okay to have fun sometimes. We're having a little bit of fun on the day after Thanksgiving here in the U.S. I don't know if you know this. Our guest is Andrew Petiprin, first of all. And Andrew, I don't know if you know this, but there are countries that don't have Thanksgiving. I have recently visited some of these countries. I don't even know how they live with themselves that they go through the whole year without thanking God by gorging on food.
I know. And, you know, our neighbors to the north up in Canada, no doubt we have some listeners from Canada. They have it on a different day. Well, I mean, imagine that.
At least they're giving thanks, though. Yeah. Like, how can you have a whole country go through year after year and not give thanks? I don't know. What do the Canadians eat on Thanksgiving, by the way? Do they eat the same thing we eat or do they eat good stuff?
I think they eat the same things, good stuff. I don't know, but I don't think it's as big a deal up in Canada as it is down here, but I might be wrong.
Come on, Canada, get your act together. If you're going to have Thanksgiving, give thanks, like do it, really do it. And I know that the people of New Zealand know that I'm talking about them because they don't have a Thanksgiving Day. And we have listeners in New Zealand. And I just want to tell you how much fun it is to give thanks to God. I believe that you as a country should do it. You're a beautiful country. You have lots to give thanks for. And the rest of us are looking at you, New Zealand, about why you don't have a day where you give thanks to God. Moving on with more Christmas movies. That's what we're talking about now with Andrew Petiprin, author of Popcorn with the Pope, a guide to the Vatican film list, which has 45 films on it. We've already established none of them are Elvis Presley films. Does it have the movie It's a Wonderful Life on it?
It absolutely does.
It does. It's a Wonderful Life made the Vatican list.
It did. It made the Vatican list.
All right.
And I was privileged to get to write the chapter about that film for our book. I co-authored the book with two other guys, and we divided up the films among us, and I got It's a Wonderful Life, which I was so happy about because It's a Wonderful Life is a really special movie to me. I've always loved it. I love Jimmy Stewart, of course, as an actor, and I really love Frank Capra as a director. He made a lot of very socially conscious movies, like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, You Can't Take It With You, a couple of other movies like that. But I think, and those are great, along with some of his other ones, like Arsenic and Old Lace is great. It Happened One Night, great, great director. But I think It's a Wonderful Life is his crowning achievement as a, we were talking about message movies before. It's a Wonderful Life is not a simplistic message movie by any means. But it is a movie that I think speaks pretty profoundly to our responsibility to each other here in this world, living in community, certainly among brothers and sisters in Christ, and also just our utter dependence upon God that we too often forget. And, you know, we just see that so clearly in the character of George Bailey, who at the beginning of the movie, everybody knows the story probably, you know, his business associate, Uncle Billy, loses $8,000, just misplaces it at the bank, and the wicked Mr. Potter finds it and doesn't give it back. George Bailey declares, you know, he takes the rap. He takes responsibility because that's what a man like him does. You know, he's a leader. He knows that that's just what you do. But he's freaking out bad. You know, he's just in the worst way. And he goes to a bar and he says, he prays. He says, but he prays in this funny way that sometimes people pray in the world today, don't they? He starts his prayer by saying, I'm not a praying man. You know, as if kind of like coming to God and saying, like, look, I know I haven't been coming through like I'm supposed to here, God.
Right.
But I really need you to help me out this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
a kind of a movie trope almost. Like, oh, Lord, you know I don't talk to you very much, but here I am coming to you. Like, yeah. God's like, wait, who are you again? No, right. That's not how that works.
It's funny though, isn't it, Si? I mean, it's a funny phenomenon in this world that, you know, when you put a person in crisis, suddenly, even if it starts out as something like that, that's kind of almost an insult to people who really do take their prayer lives seriously, it can turn into something that can really turn into a powerful transformation experience, a formation experience in faith for a person.
Sure, right, right.
And I think that's kind of what happens to George Bailey. I mean, you don't get to the end of the movie and he's like running off to mass, but he is at least acknowledging the existence of angels, for example, even though the way that the film depicts angels is not what we believe angels are. Angels aren't human beings that, you know, do good things and get their wings. We believe human beings and angels are two separate orders of creation, but hey, in a movie, it's not that big a deal.
So you're saying I'm never going to be an angel?
You're never going to be an angel.
I die, I go to heaven, and I'm still not going to be an angel?
No, but it's better that you're a human, actually. Humans are, you know, Jesus chose to be a human, not an angel, right? So to be a human being fully alive is going to be a wonderful destiny for you rather than being an angel.
All right, I'll take your assurance on that. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not exactly one of the lessons that we glean from It's a Wonderful Life, but right. It's something that we can think about. But yeah, It's a Wonderful Life is just such a powerful movie. And, you know, you think about, in a way, it makes me a little bit sad to think that we don't live in, at least here in our context in the United States, some of us live in really great communities where we know our neighbors and we look out for each other, but it's pretty rare. It's pretty rare compared to how it used to be. And what we find in George Bailey's life is he's a man who has looked out for his neighbors his whole life, and he has put them first. You know, he has sacrificed his dreams to go off to foreign lands and build things and to create things and to make a lot of money. And instead, he's settled down. He's married the girl next door. He's had a big family. And it turns out at the end that that's the greatest thing that he could do with his life. Yeah. And, you know, funnily enough, the most pitiful character in that movie, in my opinion, is not even Mr. Potter, who is the kind of wicked money grubber, although he is kind of pitiful. But the really pitiful character in that movie to me is the character of Sam Wainwright, the friend of George Bailey, who has gone off and done actually what George always wanted to do. He's gone off and made a lot of money, and he lives this fancy, flashy life. But at the end of the movie, you realize George is the one with the real wealth. You know, George is the one that this other guy, you wouldn't want that guy's life. You wouldn't want it.
Yeah.
Despite all the hardships that George has had to endure looking out for these people in this little town that everybody else has forgotten, he's got it all. He's absolutely got it all. And when he needs God, God comes through for him. How? Through the people that he has blessed already, you know, in his life. So to me, It's a Wonderful Life. It's as good as it gets. It makes you cry. It makes you laugh. You come away from it, I think, feeling just right about everything.
So often movies can make you feel that your life is small. But it's wonderful that a movie can make you feel that your life is important, that ordinary life is a wonder. I mean, to live an ordinary life, it is a kind of ordinary to live a life of service. There's a way in which all kinds of extraordinary things won't come to you if your life is a life of service. It's just the most wonderful gift to be given an ordinary life.
It is. And one more thing that I can't help but say this about It's a Wonderful Life. We started by saying that George prays reluctantly for the first time, but more importantly even is the prayers of his wife and of his children and of his community. And what's his wife's name, by the way? Mary. So we have kind of the prayers of Mary are ascending to help this man, which is kind of a beautiful thing. And again, yeah, as you say, it's an ordinary life, but as it happens, yeah, that's the best kind of life. You know, Jesus says to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, you know, Nicodemus is mystified at this language of having to be born again. And Jesus is essentially turning the question back on him, like, well, I mean, do you understand how you were born in the first place? The original born, right? Like, do we ever stop and think about that? Like, thank you, God, that I'm here. Like,
yeah,
and
right.
All these little things that I don't even understand have, who knows what little decisions I've made have saved some person's life. And I don't even know anything about that, you know? And like, what kind of effect my being here in this world has made. So thank you, God, for putting me here, you know?
Right, right. What a wonderful movie that makes us feel that way, that makes us feel the truth about ourselves, not have false feelings and false desires kind of implanted in us by envy, but to see the truth about ourselves. What a wonderful, wonderful movie. Oh, It's a Wonderful Life. So this made the Vatican list. I'm very happy to hear that Capra made it.
Yeah, it did make the Vatican list. And Frank Capra's other films are worth looking at too, but It's a Wonderful Life has really achieved a status among kind of filmgoers that very few other films have. And so I'm really glad that the Vatican, you know, some of the movies on there are movies Americans have never heard of. Some of them are foreign movies and they're great movies, but I'm really glad that some of the real classics that come from our culture are on there.
Our guest is Andrew Pettiprin. We're going to take a very quick break and come back and continue with our Christmas movie extravaganza. I just named it. That's what this hour is going to be, the Christmas movie extravaganza, a very special episode of Catholic Answers Live. Andrew Pettiprin, the author of Popcorn with the Pope, a guide to the Vatican film list, right back with more Christmas movies to talk about right after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Hosting Women Made New has helped me deepen my own faith, and I look forward to every weekend having those in-depth discussions with my guests. It's been such a blessing being a part of the EWTN family and carry on the mission that Mother Angelica started.
Women Made New, Saturday noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to the Catholic Answers Movie Channel. Well, it's actually not the Catholic Answers Movie Channel. Catholic Answers Live, but we could have that. We could have the Catholic Answers Movie Channel. Like, what's that one that the Turner? I think it's Turner. They play all the classic Turner classic movies. And Andrew Petiprin could be our the guy that introduces the movies and talks. You want to do that? You want that job?
That's my dream job, Si. Let's make it happen. Yeah.
Okay. So all we have to do. It's simple. Start a movie network. That's all we got to do.
Easy peasy.
It doesn't seem that hard. All right. So on the network, you would play Babette's Feast.
Yes.
You would play Die Hard.
Yes.
You would play It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any that we did today that you wouldn't play? Have we talked about any that? I think you've been positive about film today. You've found a lot of good films to talk about. I don't know if we've rejected any.
I've been trying to be positive. Yeah. I think there's so much to be positive about with great movies. You know, you mentioned before we weren't going to talk about Hallmark movies. And I would say, yeah, we probably wouldn't show those on our film network. I think we would leave those off. We'd show the greats instead.
Yeah, that's true. But I would like to have a late night show where you're up late and here's a movie for you to watch. And it would be all Elvis movies. I would just talk about what Elvis was up to, because he made a lot of movies. He was making like two or three a year there in the 60s. What do you think? You're the head of the network now, Andrew. Can I have this show or not?
It's yours, Si. Absolutely. Really? We need it. The world needs an Elvis show hosted by you.
There's an Elvis movie where he's a race car driver and, you know, because he's always something. He's a carnival worker in this movie. He's a surfer in this movie. But there's one where he's a race car driver and he's driving and singing, which you'll be surprised to hear that Elvis was driving and singing at the same time, but he was. And he's got a car phone. And it's like a 1967 movie, but it's like, I guess there were car phones that were radios in the old day. I think extraordinarily expensive, you know, but he was a rich race car driver. So he had a car phone. But it did look kind of more radio-ish than car phone-ish, but.
That's interesting. I remember Goldfinger having one of those in the James Bond movie, Goldfinger.
Yeah, that's a 60s movie, right? Goldfinger? Yeah. That's an old one.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. This century is the, what are we in, the 21st century now? I guess, yeah, we're in the 21st century. Any good Christmas movies that came out of this century?
Yeah, there have been some for sure. One that I think is a lot of fun is the movie Elf, which came out early in the century, 2003. It's directed by Jon Favreau, who's now become more famous for all his Marvel movies.
I never knew that Jon Favreau made that movie.
Yeah, he made that movie.
I love his movies.
Yeah, and you know, here's a little factoid about that movie. He's good buddies with Peter Billingsley, who plays Ralphie in A Christmas Story. And Ralphie, Peter Billingsley, has a cameo role in Elf in 2003. So
please tell me where. I don't know where. Do you know where it is? Or
yeah, he's one of the elves. He's one of the elves. I forget. He has some lines about, I don't know, he tells Santa Claus something. He's in a few scenes, though. So.
All right. So speaking of people who got famous for doing other stuff, because Jon Favreau, of course, is the director of Iron Man, the first Iron Man, which totally changed the entire movie industry. It's rare that somebody totally changes an industry and that's how good Favreau is. But Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage is in this movie. Yes. In a hilarious thing. And he later went on to be in that dragon show. What's that thing called?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I followed Peter Dinklage because ever since he made a movie called The Station Agent, I thought this guy is so good. But he was in Elf and the part where he stands on the table and he's like, bring it on. I just love it. It's brilliant.
I love the scene in that movie where he says he wears these like very fancy three-piece suits. He's a famous children's author, right?
Yeah, and he's a jerk.
But he's a real jerk. And poor Will Ferrell's character is thinks that he's a real elf from back in the North Pole, and he means it in sincerity that, you know, he just wants to like greet him as one of his fellow elves, right? But Peter Dinklage takes offense to this, and I love the line where he's trying to like stick up for himself and make himself seem important, and he says that in his homes in Paris, Los Angeles, and Aspen, each of them has a 70-inch plasma screen TV, and I just thought that was a really funny little bit of dialogue.
It is. It's very funny. And Peter Dinklage is such a great comedic actor. I mean, I wasn't really a Game of Thrones guy. I didn't have HBO, so I don't know about that. But as a comedic actor, he's very, very funny. But I got to say, Will Ferrell, this is a winning performance. This is real acting. He did a beautiful job in that.
I think so. I mean, it's a silly movie to some degree, but it's a really beautiful movie. I mean, like a lot of Christmas movies, there's kind of a blend of campiness and sincerity, and you got to get that blend right. But Elf totally does. I mean, it's a movie. It's a classic homecoming tale, which is a common theme in a Christmas movie about a man who, you know, has lived this other life, and he decides that he's going to be who he really is. He's not an elf. He's a human, and he's going to seek out his real family, his place of origin, as it were. And when he gets there, he's met with resistance, but ultimately it all works out for the good. And I just think it's a really touching movie. And Will Smith just does a brilliant job kind of blending that sweetness, that sincerity, and just that totally bonkers silliness. Elf has really become one of those movies that is now in the lineup for the must see every year, I think, in most families.
Well, you sometimes get the feeling that some people are trying to make a movie that'll make it into the Christmas pantheon, that it'll become an annual watch, and then you can see that that's not going to be in the annual rotation. That's not going to be a Turner classic. But with Elf, instant classic.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another one that I like from this century around the same time called About a Boy, which is probably a little less well-known than Elf, to be sure. But it stars Hugh Grant as this sort of rich but useless man who, you know, he's really trying to defy the wisdom of the poet John Donne, who said, "No man is an island." He's trying to be an island. He doesn't want connection with other human beings. He just wants to kind of enjoy his money and not get involved and be, you know, not get married. He just wants to have casual relationships with women and just, you know, just kind of live in front of his TV set and drink and play games and that sort of thing. But a boy comes into his life, played by the actor Nicholas Holt, who's been now in many, many things. And this was his breakthrough role as a child actor. And it's about a man who, you know, in like a lot of these Christmas movies, a man who learns the real meaning of life, the real important stuff. And it's got a beautiful soundtrack by the musician who, it's just one man, but his band is called Badly Drawn Boy. And it's got these very, very memorable songs that run throughout the movie. So About a Boy is one of those movies that my family and I like to watch most years. It's very touching.
And why is it a Christmas movie?
Oh, sorry, because it's set at Christmas, and it sort of begins and ends with Christmas. And one of the important plot details, or one of the character details about this man that Hugh Grant plays, is that he's gotten his fortune from the fact that his father was a songwriter who wrote a one-hit wonder Christmas song called Santa's Super Sleigh. So he lives his life hating Christmas because everywhere he goes at Christmas time, this stupid jingle that his father wrote, this jingle that is financing this good-for-nothing layabout life, by the way, but is playing everywhere. So he decides, you know, and he didn't have a good relationship with his father. So part of the movie is sort of about him coming to love Christmas and make his peace with, you know, things, the hurt of his past with his father.
There is a kind of a theme that runs through some Christmas movies about overcoming hurts of the past. And you can kind of understand that because Christmas is the natural time for people to come back together, but also to, even now, I think Christmas in a very secularized society. I mean, even if you went to a very secularized place like New Zealand, where they don't even have a day to thank God, there's a way in which Christmas, it still has a religious resonance to it. Even where it's not celebrated religiously, it's still. Am I right about that or wrong about that?
I think that's absolutely right. I think a Christmas movie that doesn't contain that theme isn't going to be successful as well. That's something, Si, that I think about a lot when I'm processing the importance of new media, that we are a post-Christian society, but we have these marks that aren't going to go away that easily. And I think that for us as Catholics and as evangelists, as apologists, it's really important to identify those. And I think what you're saying about Christmas as this occasion where even if we're not believing Christians or practicing Catholics, these things are going to present themselves to us and possibly create a kind of crisis point or decision point in a person's life where they may turn to the deeper meaning. And, you know, so I think with a lot of these films that we've been discussing, even if they're totally secular, certainly to a believer, we come away thinking about the important things, and hopefully non-believers might as well. You know, there's power there in these marks that can't just be rubbed off so easily.
I hope that that is the case. Thank you very much. Are there any more Christmas movies that you want to mention before I move on? Because I am going to move on, but I want to give you the chance to, you know, avoid angry letters from people who are like, Andrew didn't mention, you know, and
well, you know, there are a couple of things that ought to be mentioned. One is, of course, Charlie Brown Christmas, which has just the most, every year it kills me.
Me too. When
you get to the end. And Linus shares the
Gospel of Luke.
And then it ends with Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which, by the way, also is the final song in It's a Wonderful Life, which is just a beautiful hymn, a Wesley hymn. So not written by a Catholic, but has a beautiful theology
of
angels.
Can I just stop you right there? A lot of the best hymns were not written by Catholics.
Well, as a convert to Catholicism, I can attest to that myself.
There are great Catholic hymns. I'm not saying, but there are a lot of great hymns that were not written by Catholics.
Yeah, and Charles Wesley maybe was the greatest non-Catholic hymn writer of all. And Hark the Herald Angels Sing is one of his. And so it's so beautiful that the Charlie Brown Christmas ends with that. So I love that. I also love different adaptations of a Christmas Carol as well. The Charles Dickens.
Oh, right.
Story.
Yeah.
You know, I there are a lot of good ones. The Muppet Christmas Carol is really wonderful.
Did you just recommend the Muppet Christmas Carol?
Good Lord, Christmas Carol.
We are going low brow today.
No, the Muppets are great, and Muppet Christmas Carol is one of the best. I love it.
All right, what about the George C. Scott one? You like that one?
That's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. The Alistair Sim one is really good, and there have been many, many adaptations. I have to admit, this one is a little rough around the edges, but I really love the Bill Murray movie Scrooged as well, which is a kind of modern day adaptation of a Christmas Carol.
That's funny. I've been wondering this hour whether you were going to mention Scrooge. I wasn't going to bring it up because I couldn't remember. Is it objectionable in any way? But
a little bit here and there, but. Yeah, but I like it. It's got a really beautiful, heartwarming ending. So yeah, I try to include that in my rotation most Christmases.
Well, let me ask you this before we leave, and maybe we'll do a New Year's show with you. But any movies coming out that you're looking forward to? Anything coming up where you're like, I'm really looking forward to seeing this?
Well, the big one of the year. Now, the industry has slowed down a little bit because of the actor's strike and the writer's strike that has occurred this year. But the big movie of the year is Ridley Scott's Napoleon movie.
Oh.
He's made a biopic of Napoleon starring Joaquin Phoenix as Napoleon. So Ridley Scott, you know, a lot of our listeners will know him from movies like Gladiator. You know, movies like Blade Runner, you know, he's just one of the big movie directors kind of our times. And he doesn't make a lot of movies, but he makes really big ones when he does. And I love history. I'm fascinated by the person of Napoleon and kind of that historical era in Europe. So I'm definitely looking forward to that one. That's maybe the biggest one that's on my must-watch list.
Oh, that makes me happy because I wrote a long article about Napoleon because the movie's coming out for the Catholic Answers magazine online. So just go to catholic.com, go to the magazine, click it, and you can read my article about Napoleon and his relationship with Pope Pius. Hey, there's a book out right now that you might want to give to somebody. It's called Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at the Word on Fire website. Get it for that Catholic film lover. And our guest today is one of the three authors of the book, Andrew Petiprin. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed spending the day after Thanksgiving talking about movies with you.
Me too, Si. Let's do it again.
All right, let's do it. We'll have to talk about Dune when that comes out and all the other big movies. I'll do it for us. See you next time. God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.